Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Our friend Nikki at Trippy Velvet sent us the cutest bookish-inspired jewelry, and we want you to be able to get in on some of the awesome stuff she makes. Check out her website that is posted right in our show notes, and make sure to use GoodishGirls15, that's GoodishGirls15, at checkout for 15% off. Welcome to the Goodish Girls, guys. My name is Dallas.
I'm Madison.
And here we go with our deep dive of Crescent City. This week, we are on chapters 45 through 50. So as you know, if you've listened to any of our previous episodes, we are taking you on a guided tour through Crescent City. So if you have read through chapter 50, you are safe here with us. There's no spoilers for the further events in the book or in the series. Once we get towards the end of the episode, though, we are going to say goodbye to our guided tour, and we'll say hello to the House of Theories and Lore, where we will deep dive into all the things, we'll ask all the questions about things in not only this series, but sometimes in other series across the Massverse as well, including ACOTAR and Throne of Glass. So, again, welcome to our guided tour. Here we go. Chapter 45.
Not going to lie, chapter 45... essentially a filler chapter. I will briefly go over it. The only important thing is a thing that is literally the last sentence. You can't tell me I'm wrong.
Oh, man.
So essentially chapter 45 opens with Bryce talking on the phone with Juniper. They're talking about how Juniper is up for promotion as a principal dancer over at the dance company she is contracted with. She's essentially trying to get Bryce to come hang out or to come take dance classes with her instructor, which her instructor is very, very high in demand. And Bryce is like, I'll think about it. Because, again, she hasn't really taken any dance classes since the whole thing with the pack happened. If I was in Bryce's shoes, girl, I would do it. You know how hard it is to find a studio that offers, like, adult classes, but it's not, like, little kid competition classes? So hard.
I do not know how hard I have no idea, but I do know that like Bryce grieves so heavily that I like, and I think that she believes that she does not deserve joy in life.
I would agree with that, but like also Bryce, if you don't take the classes, I will, because as someone who's like also looking for a dance studio for adults that's like decently leveled, very hard.
Hi, Madison would like to sign up, Juniper.
I room. Would love to. I love dancing so much. That's where me and Bryce bond.
I love that. That's so cute.
That's like the only similarities we have. Like I don't party, but I'll dance with you, girlfriend.
Fair.
But Juniper's trying to convince her to take these classes, and Bryce is like, I'll think about it. And then Bryce tries to get Juniper to come hang out with her because Hunt has taken the initiative to go hang out with his friends for once. Mm-hmm. Usually he turns them down, but he's like, I guess I'll go out. But Bryce is trying to get Juniper to hang out. Juniper says that she would love to. However, she has practice. Mm-hmm. Once upon a time, this was the story of my life. Fun fact, I did dance for 14-ish years.
My gosh.
Yeah, I started in first grade, took like a little break because I was playing volleyball and I couldn't do both at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then I stopped senior year of high school, picked it back up in college. But yeah, friends all the time would be like, oh, you want to come hang out? And I'd be like, I would love to. However, practice or dance recital, or we're doing an outreach performance. So
yep.
Juniper, I get you, girlfriend.
That's wild. The more you know.
Yeah, I even did point for a little bit. But I was awful. Like, you're supposed to have multiple pairs of point shoes and, like, rotate them so you don't wear your shoes out too much. Mm-hmm. However, I was very money conscientious even from a young age, and I would hate spending money on point shoes. And so I would literally wear point shoes for, like, you essentially had, like, the spring season and the winter season. I would wear them for a full season, and I would always end up, like, doing recitals in dead shoes. Which is not smart, because that's how you break an ankle. But I'm like, bet money. So I will gladly suffer and just wait for the next season.
The more you know. Now I know this about you. Yeah. I did not know that. And the point shoes are like the pink shoes that you see like on all mm-hmm. stereotypical dancers, right?
Yep. And if I had them, I had a pair here that I used for a post. They will be coming back because I'm making a reel that will feature me doing a little bit of point. But yeah, the shoes are essentially made out of wood. So you have to, it takes weeks to just like soften the wood up. That way it molds mm-hmm. to your foot shape.
Yeah.
But yeah, very uncomfy. Takes forever to break in sometimes. You see videos of like sometimes dancers like
smashing them, right? Like
they'll like smash the block of the shoe. They'll like rip the shank from the fabric. Like
jumping on it.
Never did any of that in my life.
Drowning it in water. Like,
no, I just
the shoes have gone through
in my studio. We just did like you wear your, if you do it correctly, you wear your old shoes like whenever you're rehearsing a piece, but maybe for like bar whenever you're warming up, then you wear your new shoes to help break them in more. I did the wrong thing and I wore dead shoes all the time. If you dance, don't do that.
Don't do that. All right, noted. Noted indeed.
But whenever Juniper says that she can't hang out, Bryce does try to contact Fury, but of course it has been going straight to voicemail, so Bryce kind of just gives up on that. Even though she did promise on that she would stay put in her apartment, the quiet is getting a little bit too much for Bryce, so she does decide to put on her tennis shoes and head on out. Poor Hunt. Homeboy doesn't get through maybe even like half a beer, and he gets a call from Naomi to be like, hey, so she's on the move.
Okay, I want to talk about this.
Yes.
This, because I know normally I am like, it's fine, it's Bryce. She grieving, I get it. Mm-hmm. This made me so irritated. Like, he has one night out.
Mm-hmm. One night. Technically, he has multiple, but he just always tells them.
Never gone. Right. Yeah. So he like is with Bryce. He's like working, right? Like she knows that he's technically working 24/7 because he literally has to watch her 24/7. He has one night out with his friends to relax and she decides to leave. Like that is, I was so irritated.
Yeah. I was like, no. I thought that this chapter was alluding to something else. And I'm like, oh, well, now she does have like a valid reason to go out. But then like once the chapter finishes, I'm like, no, you didn't. Like, no. I get that the quiet can be too much, but dude, freaking call your mom. Ember would love to chat with you.
Yeah, like, I get it, right?
Hang out with Rune.
Call literally any, I don't know. I don't have a better, just go to bed. Go to sleep.
I think
take a shower.
Good night. Go out. I think she said it was like either 5:30 or 8 o'clock. I mean, but still early bedtime.
Go to sleep. Dude, let I know it sucks, but like maybe just try to get through it for a night so that way it's not like he was going to be out till 2 in the morning. Yeah. There's no way. You know what I mean?
Because he's responsible.
I bet money Hunt would have been home by 10 max, 100%. Latest. 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock with dinner in his hands.
He would.
8 o'clock with takeout.
I don't even think Homeboy would have had more than 2 beers. He'd probably be like, no, I gotta be responsible.
Correct.
No drinking while flying.
Yeah, right? Like, gotta look out for Bryce. Like, when I go home, if I'm drunk, then, like, I can't. You know, like, it's... Mm-hmm. She would have had to made it, like, maybe a couple more hours.
Yeah.
And she couldn't even let him, like, have that one thing. And I don't think she ever apologized either.
Hold on. I don't think she does because...
She may have. She may have apologized. I might need to redact that statement.
Okay. So she doesn't apologize. But whenever, so essentially Hunt leaves his little party with the Triari, that rhymes. And he goes to leave Naomi. Sorry.
You're not wrong. That's funny.
And the only things I see is essentially Naomi giving him like a, she's that way. And he says, thanks for that. She tells him good luck. And then he asks, like, what are you doing here? Bryce says that she was just getting some fresh air. He asks if she was going anywhere in particular. She says no. And then he's asking, like, is there a reason why you broke your promise? And she said nothing. And she's essentially being, like, very depresso espresso. And so he, like, can kind of tell that something is up, but she's not really saying what. She just says that being in the apartment alone, that sometimes the quiet gets too intense. Which, I mean, understandable, because she went from having, like, literally a whole pack in her apartment constantly. Mm-hmm. So she's used to the hustle and bustle. But she never, like, apologizes, because she also said, like, oh, I knew that you're going to have a babysitter after me, so it's fine. Like, I knew I wasn't ever truly going to be alone. But she's essentially walking through this garden. She asks Hunt if he and Naomi had a history at all. He says no, even though Naomi kind of, like, has referred to it a little bit, like, the possibility, but they don't have any history. But as they're talking, they're, like, not flirting, but they're, like, kind of getting a little bit more comfortable with one another. And as soon as you think that something's going to happen, like, maybe they're going to kiss or flirt, boom, the Crystallis decides to attack. And that is literally the only big thing that you need to focus on this chapter, is that the Crystallis makes an appearance.
Yes. Wow. That, yeah. I don't know. I'm so mad at her. I'm still a little bitter about it, to be honest.
That's
okay. I don't know if I'll get over it. It is what it is. So chapter 46, the Crystallis had jumped right on top of Hunt immediately, like as soon as it attacks. Hunt threw Bryce out of the way before it all happened. The Crystallis and Hunt, they're like wrestling. As they are going down on the ground, Hunt draws a knife and stabs the demon. This slowly but definitely did not, like, it slowed it down essentially, but it did not stop the demon. It was able to scratch his arm, and it made his lightning sputter, which is interesting. That's like something that's like noteworthy. So Hunt was then able to get the knife like into him once, like into the demon once more. But the demon got Hunt's arm and crunched down. Like, ugh, I know. So it like crunched down. And his lightning went out. His magic was gone. So Hunt screams at Bryce to go for the gun that was, like, on Hunt's side, basically. She brought the gun up, and just as the demon lunged for her, she shot. It missed. Oopsies. Yeah, so it missed, and the Crystallis went after, like, it went after her. And as it was going after Bryce, the Hunt put a knife in it one more time, and he made sure to make this one count. So Bryce fired the gun once more. Into the Crystallis, just to make sure, like, it was gone, right? Yeah. But, like, just to be 100% sure. And then Hunt removed its head, as well as multiple other body parts, just to make sure that it was clear.
As one does.
Yes, it was, like, just in case. So, as the scene erupts with the other Medwitches and the 33rd, and everybody's showing up, right? The cavalry is here. Bryce essentially goes into shock. Once she finally snapped back, she noticed Hunt was, like, really unwell. He was hunched over. He was bleeding. He was, like, not doing good. So the Medwitch is using leeches on that, which I just thought was kind of, like, a fun thing. Because, again, it is, like, super old school, even though they are in such a new – like, everything is high tech.
Yeah.
So We then learn that the venom that is in the Chrysalis demon made Hunt's power go out, essentially like nullified it, as they called it. This made sense to Bryce immediately because when back 2 years ago, when Micah was attacked, he did not fight back or like trying to defend himself. So her guess is like maybe the Chrysalis got to Micah and therefore like immediately nullified his powers. And so therefore he would have only had brute strength and didn't have a fighting chance. And if they got to the pack that quickly, then maybe the pack couldn't fight back either because they didn't have their magic. It was also noted that the witch that was caring for Hunt chose not to use the cure-all of First Light in her bag to help Hunt, but chose to use her own magic instead. So that's like noted in there. So that's like a little thing to keep in your guys' mind today. So all of a sudden, Micah arrives and immediately tries to question Hunt, which like, bro is not well still. He's still very ill. So Micah's like, what happened? So Bryce cuts in and is like, whoa, whoa, like this is what's happening. And so Micah asks, which one of the two did it attack? And we know that it was Hunt. And then he says, which
would be obvious.
Right. Which one of you did it attack first? The one on the ground.
Yeah.
The one with the injuries. Yes. But that he asked either way. And then he asked which one of them killed it. Hunt noticed it was a team effort. So they both killed it together. It's interesting that Micah had asked that, but Micah is also worried about the media, right? So that's like his main concern. So Micah's worried about the media getting this story and essentially Sandriel getting this story specifically. And if you guys don't remember who Sandriel is, Sandriel is an archangel. She is the sister of Shahar, who was Hunt's love, who died in the rebellion, and she is in town and she is basically like hanging out with Micah, but really like overlooking looking at everything, right? And we know that she's probably trying to find some way to like get her paws on this city and maybe put Micah out and also maybe Hunt. So that's who that is. So the 33rd notes that they can make things stay out of the papers, which is fair because they're basically like the FBI angels. So they can do
not
that.
Not very
so,
good FBI angels.
No,
but
they're a little bad. They're kind of bad FBI angels, but the FBI angels either way. But yeah, so the Charlie's angels say that they can keep it out there.
Micah's angels.
Yeah, and Micah's angels. So Micah then does something wild, and he burns the demon up to a crisp. There is nothing left of it. So he's like, if the media gets a hold of it, it's a problem. So now there's nothing for the media to get a hold of. I was like, whoa, that's wild. Okay. So demon no more, gone. And during this whole time, Bryce is looking for Sabine all over the scene. Because she's like, if we can catch her there, then they could have physical evidence against her instead of just circumstantial evidence. Because again, if you guys remember, like Sabine is the prime suspect right now. So Naomi does question why the demon went after Hunt specifically, and he gives a joke as an answer. He like completely disregards the question and then moves on. She takes the disregard and walks away. And then Hunt says Sabine like must have sent the demon after him because they were getting close to catching her. So she obviously like summoned it, right? Mm-hmm. So we at this point think that maybe Sabine is on to them and is trying to get revenge. Bryce is really confused at this moment, though, because she's like, we killed that demon so fast.
Yeah.
She's like, there was only two of us and we were taken by surprise, but we killed that demon. How on earth did the entire pack get overpowered so fast? Like, what happened? Which I feel like is a good question, right? I feel like that's like Bryce thinking with her detective brain between the two crime scenes. So she also notes that she specifically has walked away from this Chrysalis demon twice now, and she can't explain why. Once the crime scene is cleared up and they both approach Micah because it's time to tell him about all the things. So they tell him about the horn being repaired. They tell him about Sabine being a prime suspect and all the other stuff. However, again, they only have circumstantial evidence, nothing concrete. Mm-hmm. So they now are directed to go to Micah first thing if they find any true evidence. So that way he can take control of the situation and make sure nothing is leaked out to the media. So the only things left on the crime scene were the clear blood that comes out of the Cristalis demon and a burn stain on the ground of the crime scene. Rune eventually shows up and is taking a look at everything when a witch showed up and to tell him about what she had learned, because she was already there. And we know this witch, right? She notes to Rune, though, that the blood is dangerous and can be very harmful to sentient life. And again, he recognizes this voice, this witch, and it was the witch that he met the other day at the clinic. And he is surprised that this witch knows so much about this demon. She laughs it off and reminds him that her tutors were very old and she had very old texts to learn from, which I thought was kind of funny. She brings up the research that she is looking into for him that he had previously requested. And she's like, I'll send it to you as soon as I have the final answer. Just as Rune got distracted, this witch got on her broom and flew away. And again, he didn't get her fucking name.
He's just overtaken by how pretty she is.
Oh my God. If any suffering from just being man.
He can't help it.
You know what he's doing? He's looking at that situation with his man eyes, where he's literally covering. And he's like, you're so pretty. I can't think of anything else. I was like, you've got to be joking. You're kidding me.
It's
killed me.
I'm going to kind of just combine chapters 47, 48, and 49 because is, in my opinion, so unnecessary that they were their own separate chapters. They easily could have just been meshed into one. I feel like maybe the reason she separated it into three is because I feel like authors love ending chapters with the cliffhanger. And so I feel like it was maybe just to get that little fix, because each of those one pages does end on a cliffhanger of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
It did make my little reading brain happy, though, because I'm like, oh, I'm reading so fast.
I read three chapters, crushed it.
Yeah, but
yes.
I will be combining 47, 48, and 49 because, again, I do believe that they could have been one chapter. 47, a little bit of a filler again, and it is so, so very short. Essentially, the only thing you need to know is from the crime scene, Hunt and Bryce fly from said crime scene to apartment building roof, and again, they're having another little moment, and I'm living in my own happy world. And then Sabine crashes the party.
Of course she does.
And again, that is 47, unnecessarily short. So next chapter, still same spot. Sabine confronts Hunt and Bryce. Hunt has his gun pointed at Sabine's head, while Sabine has her gun pointed at Bryce's heart. It kind of reminded me, oh, I was going to make a Marvel reference, but you don't
watch Marvel. No, this is the Spider-Man one, right? With all the Spider-Mans,
not you know what I'm talking about? Not the Spider-Man one. I know what you're talking about, but it's the one where it's the Guardians of the Galaxy crew, Iron Man, and Spider-Man's there. But it's it's the scene where the who's Gamora? Why is Gamora? It's that scene.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone's like, whoa, whoa, everyone calm down. But it's still everyone calm down.
Yeah.
Yep. It just reminded me of that. But essentially, tensions are very high. And Hunt is kind of just at first, it took me a while to get what he was doing, because it starts with Hunt saying and he got behind Bryce. I'm like, no, dude, you're supposed to be in front of her. You're supposed to take the bullet. Mm-hmm. But he had a plan. He had a reason.
Mm-hmm. He does.
Essentially, as Sabine is talking, they're kind of clicking things together that she has essentially disabled the cameras, because otherwise, if people could see what was going on, they would have reinforcements. But as Sabine is kind of just rambling on, Hunt tries to slide his hand over Bryce's heart just in case Sabine does take the shot because he says that he'd rather him lose an arm that he can regrow other than her, and he can't bring himself to refinish that thought. But it also, I don't like how they can regrow things. I don't like that there are lizard people
thinking that. Deadpool baby hands.
I hate it.
That's all I can think of. Deadpool baby hands every time.
But he says that, and it reminded me of, like, literally the whole entire plot of the first Spider-Man movie with Andrew Garfield is about a lizard man. And it just reminded me of that. I'm like, no. Bryce is essentially yelling at Sabine, re-going all through all the allegations. So they're saying that Sabine's the one that tampered with the temple footage. And she essentially, Danica found out that she was the one that stole the horn. And she killed Danica because Danica was being a loudmouth. Also, she's jealous over the Prime wanting to tap Danica and just essentially skip over Sabine. And she's wanting all of this to happen because she's wanting Micah to look bad in front of Sandjul so that way Micah could be dethroned. And she's using the Crystallos essentially to get rid of loose ends. So while Bryce is yelling all of that, Sabine's kind of just like, no. After Bryce is done yelling all these allegations, Sabine lowers the gun to deny everything and drops the bomb that Danica is actually the one that stole the horn.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, again, I think Sarah just wanted those little cliffhanger fixes because same spot, same combo, same characters.
Right. Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah. Sabine picks it all back up and is essentially saying that she swapped the footage because Danica's the one that stole the horn. And if you re-listen / watch to the original audio, you can hear whenever Danica leaves her post. And as we talked about in previous episodes, there are no cameras inside of Luna's temple, but there are cameras around it. And Danica was stationed essentially just within the vicinity, not necessarily in. So you can hear whenever Danica leaves and comes back. So Sabine is essentially covering up for Danica. And it is unknown at this point whether or not Danica is actually the one who orchestrated said blackout. But Sabine believes that someone might have overheard Danica talking about how she stole the horn and was killed for it. So that's where she thinks the Crystallos comes into play. And Sabine essentially, as she's saying all these things, and she's like, I did not kill my daughter. However, if you threaten to kill the legacy that she left behind, then Sabine will come back to get rid of Hunt and Bryce. And with that, she jumps off the roof, shifts into her wolf form, and leaves with Amelie, who was waiting for Sabine this whole entire time. She's like her little backup on the streets. But again, three very unnecessarily long or very unnecessarily short chapters that could have just been one. It's fine.
Yeah. Part of me thinks that she was also giving us three very short chapters because she was giving us a huge chapter at the end, chapter 50. There's a lot that goes on here.
Yeah.
So Bryce is basically crumbling internally at this point, right, from her encounter with Sabine. Hunt is trying to give her space because he knows that, like, she needs it to kind of cope with what's happening. But Hunt also at this point somewhat believes Sabine and her story. So he's known her for a long time. Like, she's mean, she's vicious, whatever, but he never knew her to be a liar. So he tells Micah, like, what had happened and the lead was dead. So they are off of the rooftop now. They're in the library down in Griffin Antiques, and Rune shows up. Rune explains his reasoning for showing up as just checking in and asks if there is more information. Bryce obviously is like short with him, and things get a little heated, but Hunt steps in to redirect because she's like super stressed about everything. So Hunt is still super stressed about the demon nullifying his magic and his powers. So he questions if Rune knows anything about how that works. Rune knew a couple things. So he knows that the demon is made out of the blood of the first Starborn prince. And he knows that the demon is also made out of the essence of the Star Eater himself. So yeah, those are the two things that Rune knew. Again, that the demon is made out of two things, the blood of the first Starborn prince and the essence of the Star Eater himself. So it's like a pretty powerful demon. And it's all kind of wild because Hunt had never once found a demon that could numb magic, only random artifacts and physical objects that could do that. He did note that those objects were used on high-profile people, and the Hind was fond of using them to get information out of others. And so this name, the Hind, is pretty important for you guys to remember. So please keep that name in your mind. The Hind has been mentioned once before earlier in chapters because Sandriel's Triari, which is like Sandriel's group of like people to protect her, right? The Hind is a part of that. We have not met the Hind yet, but we have heard about her.
Rumors
of her. So keep her name in your mind. Rumors also circulate that the rebels were experimenting on turning like a magic object, taking that object and turning it into some sort of spray to spray over the Vanir to make them powerless on the battlefield, which would be insane if they got that to work. That'd be crazy. So since the Star Eater's essence is in the demon itself, Rune's guess is that this is why the Crystallos can take the magic like it did with Hunt. Just as Prince Pelias's blood gave it the skill to search for the horn, because those are all connected.
Interesting.
Rune, yeah, isn't that weird? Like, I guess they don't say it in this one, like calls to like. Mm-hmm. They don't say it in this chapter, but they have said it in this book, and they say it in, like, and they have said it in other books as well. So it's like kind of what it reminded me of. So Rune also mentions a new synthetic healing drug that has bad side effects, but could heal people very fast. He thinks that this new drug possibly could repair the horn because it would make the saying that's like been going around for a while make more sense, which the saying is light that is not light, magic that is not magic, which again is what Rune had asked that Medwitch a couple chapters back, like, hey, do you know what this means? He also notes that the drug is available on the street for sale, so now there's a potential way to repair the horn, but not the location. Bryce questions out loud if Danica stole the horn for personal reasons or something else. She's like, I wonder if Danica stole the horn for this. And Rune is like, I'm sorry, excuse me, what did you just fucking say? And so, because no one updated him, so he's like in the dark. And so, yeah, unfortunately, Rune did not know about this information and was a little taken back. So once Bryce breaks down the whole thing for him, he questions on if she wanted it for herself to like repair and use it. But Bryce says that she knew Danica's heart and knew that she would never do something like that. She thinks that Danica took the horn to make sure someone else didn't get their hands on it. So like someone wanted it, she found out. And so she had to like take it and put it somewhere safe, essentially. She fully believes that Danica's killer is still out there. And even though they did kill her for it, they never found the horn, which is why the demon is still there in the first place trying to find this horn. So Bryce mentions the star sword that is strapped to Rune's back as usual. And she's like, maybe it can help locate the horn because of the power within it, like the star power. Rune clarifies that this is not possible because the sword does not work that way. It is picky on who, when it comes to like who can hold it, like only those with starborn power can hold the sword. But otherwise it really doesn't do much besides like look good and kill people. However, he mentions something very interesting, which is that the sword is useless without its counterpart. This counterpart is a knife, and that knife was lost eons ago. It is a part of a pair, essentially. So like it's the two of them. And it's also, it's noted that the sword and the knife are literally older than Midgard itself. So that's like way old. The sword and the knife were made from Iridian, which was found from a meteorite that slammed into their old world before they all came through the Northern Rift to Midgard. So that's like also a big chunk of information. So like there was a world that they all used to live in. That world got hit by a meteor. Then they like came through this like hole in time and space itself and like came to this world that is Midgard. So it says, he said that even the Fae archives have no idea how it got lost, but the guess is that it was lost during the first war, like way back in the day, literally again eons ago. So Bryce says a quote from legends slash like a prophecy that passed down through generations through the Fae, which is, when the knife and sword are reunited, so shall our people be. I'm going to say it one more time because this needs a hit. Put it in the file in your brain. When the knife and sword are reunited, so shall our people be. And it's literally carved into the Fae Archives building. No one is allowed to go into these Fae Archives, though, because it's like basically like for royals only. And important people, as they say. So like even on the holidays when they open the doors, it's only to people on approved list. So like no one can really go in there. Our girly Lahaba, she has one dream, and that is to go into the archives and look at the books. And even though she reminds us that she is a descendant of Queen Ranthea Drawl, Bryce reminds her fire sprites would never be allowed in. And Bryce also doesn't really believe that Lahaba is a descendant of this queen. And she says that, like, Lahaba's like...
Keep going. I think this is a chapter that I had a note that I was like,
okay, so Bryce doesn't really believe that Lahaba is a descendant, but she says that she was her 6 times great-grandmother who was dethroned. There was like some past drama that had happened. Bryce shuts Lahaba's story down and says that it changes every time, but Lily stands her ground. She's like, no, it doesn't. She reminds the room that her grandmother fought alongside the rebellion, and that was the time that all of her people lost their freedom, which literally... broke Hunt inside, like internally. Hunt apologizes to her because what else is he supposed to say? But Lily doesn't blame him for any of it, even though he was the one who led everyone into battle. However, Rune reminds him that Shahar led him into battle, so she does need some of the blame. Before we move on from this, Bryce Quinlan. I do love her. But. I love her. But I swear, leave Lahaba. Like, what I get being like, Lahaba, sit down. Or like, Lahaba, like, go watch your show. Like, I get it when she, like, tries to get Lahaba back on track so that way they can move on with their day. She was, like, serious. She's like, this is my family legacy. How is Bryce supposed to know, first of all, who her family legacy is? Mm-hmm. Like, Lahaba knows where she's from. I was like, girl, there is a time and a place to tell Lahaba to calm down, and this is not it. Like, absolutely not. I was so mad at her. I was like, you're joking. So the subject has changed, and Lily asks Rune if he was ever able to visit the Fae Archives on Avalon, and she hears they are like pretty grand. They're really nice. He says the Fae on the Island of Mist are even more like they're more pompous than others, so they're less than welcoming. And we will learn more about Avalon and like the Island of Mist later on in this series. So they don't stress about it now, but like they will come back up. So it's like something to kind of keep in mind. Mm-hmm. So a smile finally made its way to Bryce's face, and Hunt made sure to snap a photo of it because obviously she's been like a little stressy, depressy lately.
Cute.
So more photos are being taken on his phone. Rune left to deal with something at the barracks, but before he made his way out, some drama unfolded between siblings. And again, Hunt does not know that these two are siblings. They are still cousins at this point. Rune does a lot of jobs that are basically below his pay grade as a literal prince, right? And Bryce makes a comment that he is under the king's thumb, the Autumn King. Rune counters with the fact that everything was going fine until she came into both of their lives, which, ouch. But also, like, her comment was ouch as well. So, like, they're both very much in the wrong. So this is when Bryce poses the question that the king was alive and around the last time a starborn prince appeared, and asks if the king has ever been questioned on why that starborn prince never made the drop or what even happened to him in the first place. Yeah. So that is
a great question.
A very good question. One that we should all keep in mind. Rune shuts her down very quickly and says that it was an accident during his ordeal. And if in our world, we're like, ordeal is like a regular word, but Madison, do you want to remind our listeners like what the ordeal is to them?
Yeah, so essentially in fae culture, you go through two things. You go through a rite and an ordeal. Your ordeal is essentially a thing that you have to overcome. It can be something as small as overcoming a cold, or it could be fighting a worm. Rune and Deck and Flynn, they had their ordeal. What exactly the king's ordeal was, we don't know, but mm-hmm. he in fact had to do a thing, and I feel like ordeals, the information is kind of just like kept to themselves.
Yep.
Because it is in fact an ordeal mm-hmm. in every sense of the word.
Yeah, they're all like very secretive about it. It's very weird. But yeah, it's not just like a regular event happening. It's like something that happens in your life that you have to overcome.
Yeah.
So Bryce says that she wanted to open his eyes before something bad happened to him too. But Rune knows what the king is and what he is capable of. And he leaves. Another guest arrives and made Bryce's whole day. An otter stood on her doorstep making all of her literal dreams come true. And if you guys don't know. Fun. Yes.
So one of the last fantasy ball events I went to, it was mostly like ACOTAR, a little bit of Throne of Glass, a little bit of Crescent City. There was a vendor there who was wearing an otter onesie with a yellow vest.
Oh my god.
And we went to her table. I can't remember if we bought something from her or not, but I always make it a goal to talk to everyone. But we went to her booth and she's like, would you guys like some otter mail? And I'm like, yeah. And so I still have it. I haven't had it in me to like unravel it, but I have the teeniest tiny little scroll with a little crescent moon pendant like binding it together.
Oh cute.
So I do have otter mail. I don't
you've
know
never opened the otter mail
because it's so cute. And
what's written on the inside though?
I don't know. Something.
Can we open it on the pod?
I'll have to dig around for it. Maybe next.
Okay, pod. Next week. If I can next find episode.
Because I have like a bag of like all of my con stuff. So
you have so much self-discipline.
I sure
wow
do sometimes.
I'm very impressed. There is no way I could have left like I what's like, written I on even, the inside.
I even bought a blind date with a book and it's so beautifully wrapped that I haven't I
just can't wrap it.
I undid the bottom and I like saw like in big I saw the colors and I saw in like big words what I assumed was Yaros and I was correct and I know that it's Variation mm-hmm. so I have yet to read it. I've heard amazing things about Variation by Rebecca Yaros, which is one of her contemporary works mm-hmm. but she's just so pretty. I don't want to unwrap her.
At least you know what it is. It's not a total secret.
Oh yeah, because I'm okay. always stressed about week. Blind date with the books because I'm like, what if I already have it? Mm-hmm. And, but luckily, the person who was running that booth, love her. It was Jalex Design, so Jalex. Go check out her things; they're really, really fun, really, really cute. But she would tell you at her booth, she's like, if you want to know what it is, and like if you think you've read it, just like ask me, and I'll mm-hmm. let you know. So. It also like kind of became a game with me and my friend because we'd like read the descriptions and be like, is it this book? And she'd be like, maybe. And we're like, yes, that book. And so we like keep on going her. We're like, is this this book? And she's like, maybe. And we're like, cool, cool, cool.
Oh, that's cute.
But no, I didn't ask about what Variation was, but I am glad that I got mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, you should read it. But also, you should find that scroll and we need to open it next week.
I will. I know exactly I where the bag is. It's just a matter of digging through all the things.
Yes, dig through. This is your we're challenging you now to bring the otter scroll to next week's episode. So, again, as we know, Cutest Otter is on her doorstep and held a message for her with kisses from Therion. I wonder if in your scroll it's going to just say kisses and love Therion or like something funny like that.
I would riot.
I would be so I would I laugh so hard.
Kisses. I don't want that man to message me.
Okay. No. Don't tell us why yet. We don't know enough about him. Our listeners, they're baby ears. We don't agree on that either. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm excited to dive into this. We'll get into it.
Don't worry. Later on. So in the letter, though, was a photograph with a dead body. So let's see. Let's hope that that's not what's in your letter, your tiny scroll. So Therian got this body from a Sobek, which is a water monster that basically scared most Vanir. So like for Therian to just go grab one, that's wild. He's like crazy. So the note says that the bite mark on the torso are not consistent with the Sobek teeth. And the person was already dead before it went in the water. So the Sobek did not kill it. The wounds look just like the one from the Crystallos demon, and the body is about 5 days old. There was clear venom in the wounds, and Therian knows that because he could sense it. So like the guys with their like water magic and water powers can sense like ailments and illnesses and like what's in your veins, things like that. But when it was actually tested, it negated magic, which is a clear sign that like it was bitten by a Crystallos demon. He looked into records of unidentified bodies and saw that there were two of them found, both about 2 years ago when the pack was killed. All were reporting, like all of the bodies that were found 2 years ago were reported missing weeks after they were gone, which I thought was also very interesting and very like my crime bells are ringing, right? Like my TV watching detective skills.
Senses were tingling.
Yes, my inner Olivia Benson is like, what's happening here?
We love Detective Benson.
Detective Benson. Dun dun. Yes. Bryce then states that the Crystallos was not the creature that killed Danica, which is, you're like, hold on, what? She's like, this didn't kill Danica. But she states that she saw the demon in the hall during the night of the pack's death, but not inside the apartment. So the packs didn't have actual bites taken out of them. They were in literal ribbons torn completely apart. So like all of the evidence that's piling up now from like the damage that the Crystallos demon does has been pretty much consistent, but it's not consistent with what the pack had.
I also love how I feel like it's very common in fantasy books. I know it's definitely mentioned in ACOTAR quite a bit, but mm-hmm. I like how the go-to word is always they're found in ribbons, or like I'll cut you into ribbons. Mm-hmm. And like that's a very interesting specific word to use.
It is a specific word, which is very interesting. I feel like Sarah also has like a lot of those ones that she does. And I think we've talked about this before that like, I think that if I had to guess, her favorite number is 3.
Mm-hmm.
And she does a lot of things in 3s.
Yeah. I also want to know what her deal is with watery bowels.
I'm not going to lie. It took me a while to get used to that when I, like, first started reading. I was like,
listen,
okay,
right. Whenever I first started reading, and that was also whenever I was first starting my upset stomach journey, so like anytime Feyre would have like watery bowels or nausea, I'm like, I read to escape my own nausea, so yeah, just like,
yeah, I don't know why I do this. I mean, maybe like, she's trying to bring to light and like help normalize like people with IBS, right? Like
maybe
if Feyre can do it and still be like Rhysand's mate and like lady of the night court, then so can you.
Yeah, kind of, but the whole time I was reading, I was like trying to escape. I'm like, Feyre,
no,
it's fine. Like,
Feyre, keep it to yourself.
Tamlin's a jerk, but I'm gonna be Tamlin for just like a moment, and I'm gonna
just tone
you out.
So funny. It's wild. I don't know.
Even so, I think a few times with Violet too. I'm just like, Violet, no,
just stop talking. That's funny. So the question is, were they looking for the wrong creature this entire time, right? That's what's, like, being posed right now. Was the Crystallos summoned to look for the horn, but something else, something worse came behind it, like, when it was summoned? Something, like, popped out in the from the shadows? So Hunt did not know of any demon of that kind that did that like, type of damage unless it came from deep within the pit. And he, like, it was a new one that he hadn't heard of. But the other question that is posed is, why summon something worse than the Crystallos? They already do enough damage, right? They needed more help on this. They needed an outside perspective on this entire situation. So there they go to find it. And again, Sarah leaves us with like a dead in your tracks kind of cliffhanger, because in this chapter we do not know who they are going to, but we do know that hopefully Hunt doesn't hate Bryce for bringing her there, or bringing him, like, them there. So we'll see. Yeah. Next week.
Very short, very cutesy episode. Not cute, yeah, but very short. But
like a lot of information packed into this chapter. So like I almost be like, thank you, Sarah, for not like for making those previous chapters shorter so that we could digest all of the stuff that's happening in this one. So I feel like she maybe did it on purpose. And also if you notice it was three short chapters in a row. I should point that out.
Back on that lore.
The number three is also my favorite number, so I would love that her favorite number is three. And she has three series, and this one is three books right now anyways.
I was about to say right now.
Yeah, and then like I think we've talked about this before, like with ACOTAR and things like that, like it's like three books and then a novella, and then and like then
hopefully Nesta will get three books as well.
It's my dream. I know it's not everybody's dream, but it's my dream, and I stand by it, and I will die on that hill, and you guys can fight me.
Because once, if you have not read all the books yet, but whenever you do read the third book ends at such a beautiful thread that
people try to destroy on the internet.
That she could just pick and continue from that little thread.
She could.
I will try to kill it. If that thread is a side quest, I'm gonna be so mad.
I don't think she'll do it. I think she'll do three, three, and three with a novella in between because there's three sisters.
Yeah, I have like another note for theories and lore later.
Yes. Well, let's do it. Thank you guys for joining us on your guided tour through Crescent City today. It was a short one, but a good one. We are going to go into the House of Theories and Lore. So again, if you have not read all three series all the way through, this is going to be spoilers. If you want to stick around anyways, that is totally up to you. It's your life. You live it. Here we go. House of Theories and Lore.
So going off of my thread, I was essentially, the little thread I was talking about is how the book three ends with Bryce telling Nesta to go find out what her tattoo means.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. So you all know that I have been on the train that Nesta is Starborn, yes?
Yes. Well, I mean, we should have listened to previous episodes, right? Because, like, even we, us and Delaney, like, went through all of that.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. So, not only that, but there's another theory going around that Nesta is a witch, especially like, maybe the Blackbeak clan. Or like the Iron Teeth clan, because they're described as having the iron teeth and nails. And whenever, I think it's like the first time Nestachar is going down the stairs, she falls. And whenever she's making her way back up, she sees the scratch marks on the wall. And so I was like, kind of, maybe. However, I was looking at someone doing a Manon cosplay yesterday, and it's specifically the scene that has the iconic "I'll bleed whatever color you tell me to" by Dorian. But there's something that's really, really interesting. So in a couple episodes back, whenever I was like pulling receipts for why Nesta is Starborn, one, again, this is the beginning of Silver Flames, whenever Nesta is talking about being in the cauldron. She says that the black water nipping at her thrashing heels was freezing, not the bite of winter chill, or even the burn of solid ice, but something colder, deeper. The cold of gaps between stars, the cold of a world before light. Stay with me. Whenever you go to Queen of Shadows, it is page 463. So Dorian and Manon. I struggle to say that one.
Get it, girl.
I was going to say Mano.
You did great.
So they're talking. And little emo, I call him emo Dorian. He's being really spicy. And they're flirting and she's like essentially saying like, oh, I've been with men. You're all the same. But as they're describing Manon through Dorian's eyes, it's essentially saying that Manon's eyes narrowed, the gold like living embers. He'd never seen anyone so beautiful. This witch had been crafted from the darkness between stars.
Oh. Okay. All right. All right.
You picking up?
I'm following you. Yeah. So then I pose a question to you. Are all three of the Archeron sisters' witches was Nesta actually fathered by somebody else? Was she adopted? What is her true story?
Oh, that's... I feel like I would have to do a reread of ACOTAR because I know that her and Papa Archeron were not close. I can't remember the reasoning why, because I know, like,
because Nesta's... he didn't do anything as a father, right? Like, he had all these spices.
But even, like, beforehand, you would think, especially as, like, firstborn, she had time.
They explain what happened.
It's been so long since I've read it. Again, so this is why I say I got to do a reread.
Yeah, so, like, basically, Feyre was gravitated towards Dad, right? And was, like, and interested in all of that stuff.
Towards Nesta.
And Mom basically groomed Nesta to grow up and marry, like, a rich prince or, like, somebody in royalty and, like, forced her to dance and do all of these things and, like, groomed her. And her mom was, like, kind of... I mean, yeah, she does love dancing, but, like, there, like, even times where, like, even I think it even said, like, grandma, like, laid a hand on her because she didn't do what she was supposed to do. Like, there was a little bit of abuse in there. So, and yeah, then, like, so
I don't know.
There wasn't, like, really room for a relationship. So, I don't know.
I don't know. This is such a great question.
Yeah. And we don't have to have the answer today. Like, we can come back to that, right? Like,
I know.
Who are they really?
Like, I need answers.
If you guys have any thoughts, DM us, email us, let us know at goodishgirlspod. goodishgirlspod@gmail.com. So I have a couple things I want to talk about Crescent City wise in the House of Theories and Lore today. Every time I reread this series, I feel so stupid for not knowing that Micah was behind it all. Like, bro showed up at the crime scene and immediately burned the evidence before anyone even got a real look at it. And no red flags were raised. But, like, this is, like, crime scene cover-up 101. You know what I mean?
It's also, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, stressed so much that he doesn't want this to get out because he doesn't want to look undermined in front of Sandriel.
Right, which I get. But, like, once you know the ending and you go back again, you're like...
Oh, 100%.
Bro, you were literally red flag after red flag. And we had asked... I had asked in the beginning, like, of our deep dive. I was like, was there stuff that we missed? And, like, yes, there was definitely things that we missed. This is also one of the things.
At this point in time, the tattoo parlor has been mentioned, like, 3 times. And, again, this is something that they just
didn't they never they went to there.
Look into.
Yeah. Life isn't that wild? And so then I pose another, like, question as why was our wonderful witch not ever a suspect? Rune, well, like, was Rune so caught up in how pretty and smart she was that he never thought to be like, you say that you know all of these things about this demon because you, like, were grown up with, like, old tutors and, like, old texts, but, like, you're at all of the crime scenes. You know a ton about this demon. You have powers. You can literally summon, like, you're a witch, right? And then, like, obviously we know that she wasn't involved in the end. Like, we know, like, Hypaxia was a good person. But, like, during it, in my mind, she would have been a huge suspect. Hunt mentioned this is probably an inside job because of the cameras, right? Like, we know that she has power. She has reach. I just feel, I was like, why was she not considered a suspect? Or was the fact that she was only talking to Rune, he was so distracted. If Hunt or Bryce would have heard this stuff come out of her mouth, would she have then been a suspect? Because they have a clear eye, like, vision of her.
I think the reason she wasn't considered a suspect was, one, you do bring up a good point of the fact that only Rune has been in contact with her, like, in depth. Because whenever you have, like, have a crime scene, you're going to have police, depending on it all, a medic, and she's essentially acting as medic.
Right.
But the reason why I don't think she's included is because in a couple chapters back, whenever they're talking about potentially the rebels being behind this, they specifically say that they would need a Veneer's help. And or someone says that they would need a veneer's help, maybe a witch is summoning the Crystallos, and Rune says, unlikely a witch was involved, they only obeyed the Asteri, they've had a millennia of unbroken loyalty. So because of that, I think it was she was just automatically ruled out because...
Yeah. How cool would that have, like, been, though?
Yeah.
If she was, like, actually the bad guy.
Yeah, I wanted Lydia and Rune to end up... I love Rune and Lydia, but I wanted Rune and Hypaxia to end up together so bad.
I know. That would have been a nice story. Cute. But also, like, I like that we finally eventually get to Lydia's story, like, way down the line.
Love her.
I know. I do, too. That's fair. Those are fair things. I just had, like, questions.
Mm-hmm.
The Olivia Benson in me was like, why was she not a suspect?
But speaking of, like, detective radar going off. So during chapter 50, Bryce does say a thing that I'm like, hold on, girlfriend. Because I feel like a lot of times whenever Easter eggs are dropped, especially in this series, it's like kind of in like a joking matter. And then it's like, oh no, wait, that was something serious.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a hot minute since I've read Crescent City 3, so I can't remember all of the things that Bryce unlocks. I know that she becomes the queen of... I called it Avalon. I think everyone else calls it Avalon. Okay.
I call it Avalon.
So I know she's, like, big into her power, gets title of queen. I feel like she gets something else. I can't recall. But what she says, I'm like, hold on, is whenever Lily is saying that... that she is, like, they would let me in. I am a descendant of Queen Ranthea. And then Bryce says, yeah, and I'm the seventh Asteri. And I'm like, like, that's never a title that she unlocks. But I'm like, is her power
well, it's not because like seventh? They eventually find that seventh Asteri.
Yeah. But I'm just like, what if in the fourth book, as they're, like, creating a new governmental structure because all those Asteri are gone, like, what if Bryce is the new Asteri?
Oh. Know? I don't know if she'd want that.
She probably wouldn't. But, like, someone's got to do it.
Yeah. Somebody has to do it, I guess. But I don't know. Seems like kind of a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. Han doesn't need that in his life. He needs to do holiday.
Boy needs to chill out. Yeah, no, that's fair. Okay. Yeah, I didn't have a lot for this week. I know we had talked a lot with Delaney, like, last week, so I feel like that was where a lot of our stuff went. But I do pose, like, these crime scene questions themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I do like the theory that we talked with Delaney, that I do think Hypaxia was, like, trained by the healers from the tower and the drum glass.
Yeah, agreed. I like that theory a lot, too, as well. Yeah. I love it. Well, thank you guys for joining us today. If you liked this episode, you can drop us a comment or rate our show so that way we can be pushed out a little bit further, get noticed more, and then we can have other friends listen as well. So thanks again for hanging out. My name is Dallas.
I'm Madison.
And this was The Goodish Girls. See you later. Can't get enough of The Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.